Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today, once again, by Mike from the Blue Boys Network. Mike, cheers for coming on.
It's all right, mate, no problem at all. Always happy to join fellow Blues in a difficult conversation.
Well, on that note, just for the Blues who are tuning in to maybe our podcast for the first time, or you're seeing or hearing from Mike for the first time, please check out the Blue Boys Network. Your video the other day was brilliant, Mike. Obviously straight from the heart, but also a lot of good, you know, insight in there as well. Comparing City's charges with ours, but obviously looking back on the City game. Please give them a follow if you don't already. Subscribe to their channel. Superb content. And again, regular as clockwork. If anything, they've just constantly got stuff out, so it's always good to give them a follow. Mike, I'm going to just start briefly on, again, following on from the point around your review of the City game. City were admittedly too good for us on the day. Can you take anything from that game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody can argue that we can't defend, because we can. You know, we're fairly high up in the statistics for pretty much all defending work. You know, goals conceded from crosses. I don't think we've conceded a header this season. It was two moments of, it really isn't mistakes from Everton, really, more than Manchester City playing really good football. You know, the first goal comes into the box. It should have been cleared a little bit better than it was. It gets cleared and ricocheted, goes right to Haaland. Haaland 6 yards out, he's always going to score. And then on top of that, the second goal, we've got the ball on the right-hand side of their pitch. We make an absolute mess of it. Don't put the ball in the box, and they pull away and hit us on the counter. So there's no negatives from the City game, in my opinion. The only thing that I would dwell on is the fact that from an attacking perspective, we were pretty much non-existent. There was no corners for Everton. There was none of those balls into the box where we can put players on the goalkeeper. There was very little attitude in terms of trying to get the ball quickly forward and try and cause City problems. And look, part of that is because you're away at Manchester City. Now, I know I almost don't have a problem with that, going there and trying to get a draw in our situation. But, you know, against teams like Palace and Brighton and West Ham that are coming up, you definitely need to see more attacking intent. So that's the only thing for me. I didn't see many negatives. I thought the players were brilliant, but I also didn't think they were poor. And I think if a more confident Everton team went to Manchester City, I think they probably would have made more of an attacking game of it. But it is what it is, mate.
No, I'm with you, mate. And I think I tried to compare it to the performance last season from Frank Lampard's Everton. And I actually thought it was a better performance. I remember that game, and we rode our luck on many occasions in that particular game. We obviously got a worldie goal from Damari Gray, which ends up getting us the point. I guess you could say if you put a Damari Gray on for the last 20 minutes of that game, we, you know, before City got the second, we may well have seen a very similar outcome. But I think, if anything, we probably deserve more from that game at the weekend than we did the last time we played them at the Etihad, and that's probably the best credit you could give them. I agree, though, you know, certainly when we go away to teams, you know, at the upper end of the Premier League, I include probably Liverpool in that one early in the season. I thought we could have got it then before the red card came a little bit better. I thought we got into good areas, but it didn't really produce. And I think when you do go and play, you know, your cities, and I think about the teams maybe that have, you know, to the middle or lower ends of the Premier League that have caused City problems in the past. And it has actually been, ironically, your Crystal Palaces who've maybe had like Zaha or Elise, and we're going to talk about them in a moment. Or Eze, you just got that one player who can come up with a bit of magic on the break and kind of get you that goal. And you look around that team and you are lacking that player who can pull a rabbit out of a hat, aren't you? And And when you go away to, you know, the likes of Man City, you maybe have one moment. And we're just lacking that player at the moment to produce something in the one moment, aren't we?
Yeah, and it's been a thing of Everton's for not just last season with Damari Gray and the fact that, you know, the moment Dyche come in, he was literally, you know, that was it for Damari Gray, you know, he was done. We've had these players in the past that have had these individual moments of brilliance, and then they don't play. You know, I think we had it, 5 years ago with players like Ademola Lookman. You know, that's another player.
Delafeo, Morales.
And we have these players that have this moment of brilliance or have this ability to create something out of nothing. But because, you know, for whatever reason, they're almost frowned upon almost. And specifically with players like Damari Gray, Ademola Lookman. You know, their attitude gets questioned and their ability gets questioned. And you sit there and you think, well, I know if I was as good as them, and I'm probably the best creative winger in the team that can create a goal, that can beat a man, I know that I would be expecting to play over the players that were playing at the time. Yeah, so would I have an attitude? Probably.
Rooney had problems, didn't he?
We're very quick to do it. And I think the players that we've got now, they put in a shift, they work hard, you see them for 90 minutes run around. But I've not been blown away by Jack Harrison. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I have, because I haven't. I'm not that fussed if we keep him in the summer, if I'm being honest. Dwight McNeil, he's had issues off the pitch where he's deserved a little bit of time away from the pitch, because he's not, in a lot of games this season, he's not really looked interested. He's not looked any. So for me, I have wanted and craved that player who can do something. And look, to call that, it's been great for us. But against a Man City team, it's not going to be Decore carrying the ball 40 yards and having a composed finish. I'm not saying he's not capable of it, but the fact of the matter is, it's not necessarily in his locker in that sense to do all of it. I thought it was a bit of a struggle, and
I think like you said before, Mike, I think it's one we can put behind us. I don't think there's any damage done to the team morale, is that I thought we held our own defensively, as you said. And I think in terms of positives, as you put at the very start of your piece, I don't think we can really, you know, we can ask much more of the defence. Certainly the players off the ball, the back four have been outstanding, whoever has been in there really in recent times. Mikhailenko has been nothing short of a revelation in terms of how accomplished he looks now as a Premier League defender, how strong he looks, how physical he looks. So again, I think there's lots of positive, as you said, in that defensive third of the pitch. Jordan Pickford's currently occupying the Golden Glove in terms of number of clean sheets. So, you know, I guess if I told you these stats or told you these kind of things a year ago, you kind of wouldn't be surprised, given we've got Sean Dyche as our manager. But it's almost quietly happened, hasn't it? It's slowly become a thing.
Well, he's managed to turn a team that, you know, did concede goals and didn't score loads of goals into a team that still doesn't score loads of goals but concedes a lot less. And in a relegation battle that we are currently in, if we still are at the end of the season, is still obviously to be seen. But based on right now, we're in a relegation battle. Those clean sheets, those goal differences, those not conceding six at Manchester City and five away at Liverpool sort of thing. You know, these games are absolutely paramount to staying in the league. And, you know, you'll have teams like Luton, like Palace, like Burnley, like Sheffield United, like Forest, Brentford. All of these teams will go to teams like Liverpool, like Man City, like Arsenal, like Chelsea, and they'll get smashed. And Everton just haven't been. They just haven't had the same kicking. And we've been fortunate, really. You know, we identified an issue, I'd argue, at against Aston Villa right at the start of the season when Michael Keane was exposed several times. Mm-hmm. Jarrod Branthwaite comes in. We obviously had issues at left and right back. But yet, you know, every player, when we've called upon them, they've done our job. You know, Ben Godfrey's been a revelation at right back recently. Yeah, but when I've seen him before, he looked awful, if I'm being honest. And Mykolenko, as you rightly say, I mean, there will be players interested in a left back in the Premier League who is simply good at defending, because he's not very good going forward, but he's phenomenal staying one-on-one, not getting beaten by a ball. So, yeah, I'm really happy defensively, but we definitely miss somebody that can put the ball in the back of the net. And I think the quality of our wingers is bottom five teams. I really don't. And I know this is disrespectful to these players, but I really don't rate Harrison particularly high. And I think it speaks to the fact that he was in a Leeds team that got relegated. And the same you can say for McNeil with Burnley. I just don't think they're as good as we could have.
No, it's fair enough. Definitely wouldn't argue with that at all, mate. And definitely something we'll probably come back to when we briefly preview the Palace game in a bit. On the point of, you know, the relegation battle or the potential relegation battle, one of the big factors, of course, which is going to determine how deep in a relegation battle we are, is the, you know, the current points deduction and whether that's going to be reduced. On that matter, we've obviously now had words from the Premier League via Richard Masters in a letter to the Department for Media, Culture and Sport, that they do not intend to release the minutes of the meeting that took place to determine Everton's, or say determine to state what they believe to be Everton's punishment. And they believe those minutes should be private, is a private meeting. I mean, it's just another chapter, isn't it, of this debacle, you know, and this ridiculous set of circumstances that the Premier League, are manifesting.
But to be honest, it stinks. Like, it stinks. Mm. If you put into perspective, you know, this is a business that generates, what is it, £4 billion a year, is it, the Premier League? This is a business where, you know, you've got football teams that are massively involved in the community. You've got Everton Football Club, which has always been a fan club. You've got, you know, a group of supporters who are passionately, fiercely passionate about, you know, just football in general. It's not like Everton are sitting there going, we're the best club in the world, because we know we're not right now. But what we're not expecting is to be shafted at every turn and for every single situation to be perceived as different by the Premier League. And, you know, this has happened lots of times. Richard Master saying they won't release a minute is a joke. The fact that, I think it was 2 days ago, an article come out saying Richard Master had blamed Brexit and the UK-Ukraine war for, you know, how difficult it has been in managing the Premier League. Yet Everton can't use that as a mitigating statement in what was clearly, obviously, a club that was financially backed by Megafon, who were involved in Russia and Usmanov, and Everton can't put that as a mitigating factor why they can't sell players. Now, look, whether those players were overinflated or not, 8 players at £10 million is not unrealistic each, but based on the fact that we saw Neil Maupay for £15 million. So it's not unrealistic what Everton set themselves up by. And it's also not realistic. It's also clearly not fair that clubs like Wolves, like Everton, like Forest, like Newcastle, like Villa, like all of these other clubs that have got, you know, a decent backing, having to sell players to the clubs that have got higher revenue, higher income, higher turnovers, simply because they fit profit and sustainability a little bit better because their revenues are higher. It's a completely archaic system. It doesn't work. And all it does is take the competitive edge away from the Premier League. The Premier League is a farmers league with one team in it, Manchester City, and you occasionally have a couple of teams that spend a lot of money trying to punch upwards. But let's be real. I don't think Arsenal are in the same league as Manchester City. And I think if Liverpool lose a couple of their key players next season, they're not going to be either. And the Premier League have allowed this to essentially happen. It's a joke. It is an absolute joke, and it stinks, and it explains, it shows that clubs like Everton that have got a strong tradition, a great history, a club that has spent the second longest time in top flight behind Arsenal. You know, Arsenal have never been relegated. Everton have been relegated once. We are a massive football club, and the Premier League need to start remembering that. Every other team in the league need to start remembering that. When you've got Manchester City that have played 22 seasons in the top flight, I believe, and Everton have played over 80 or whatever it is, it's chalk and cheese. So I think Everton need a little bit more respect. I think the fact that they treat the community, I'd argue, better than any club is certainly the you know, the community itself has won numerous awards. The fact that Everton sit here today having to sell players in the summer to be financially compliant when the costs, my understanding, is against loan payments on the stadium, which they can't do anything about until the stadium is built and essentially a mortgage can be put on it, is an absolute debacle. And based on the fact that clubs like Manchester City have had their stadium handed to them, it's a joke. It's a joke.
Mm. No, nice rant, mate. Couldn't have put it any better. I think the one thing I'd add about the most recent developments is the simple fact that the Premier League wouldn't be the Premier League without its members. And the members of the Premier League should, by default, have a right to access any set of minutes where any of those teams are discussed. It shouldn't even be a factor. And that's like a staple requirement of any membership, of any, you know, any competition, any club, anything that you're in, where it, you know, it's assembled based on its founder members or based on its members. Any meeting that takes place about those members, or, you know, to decide anything that dictates or impacts on the competition itself or impacts on that club or that membership, should be open to those members. Now, whether they don't want to publish it and put it, whatever, but we should have a right. And any club, I mean, you know, other clubs at the top of the league, you know, you just mentioned, you know, your Liverpools and Chelsea's and all that, they should want to know what has been said in that meeting and why whatever decision has been taken, has it not been applied? Or have you tried to do the same at Man City? Because we want to know as well, because it's impacting on our future, our ability to compete for trophies. You know, your Aston Villa, you mentioned then. These are all clubs that are being, you know, they're being negatively impacted by the lack of action being taken against Man City and other clubs in that bracket.
Yeah, and the other fundamental is the fact that it doesn't, it stinks in the simple fact that as a football club, Everton have always tried to do the right thing, and yet you've got a board in the Premier League that are now being looked at and scrutinised for how they've handled Everton. So they've created such a big problem because they're now stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because they can either continue to nail Everton, which, you know, if they choose to do that in a second penalty and this appeal doesn't work and we still have 10 points, Everton legitimately could have a 20-point deduction by the end of this season, and that will see us in the Championship. Now, if they want that, fine, because they did similar to Derby, they've done similar to clubs in the EFL. Like, if that is what football, if that's what these hierarchical establishments want, clubs to essentially be relegated for building a stadium or to try and do something to be aggressive and try and go forward, it takes a competitive edge away yet again. So you're creating a Super League within the Premier League by the top six clubs. You may as well have a separate league table for these teams. And the biggest fundamental annoyance for me is this actually goes back absolutely years, because in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, Everton were the fifth best team in English football by a decent mile. You know, Everton consistently finished fifth, Spurs consistently finished sixth, and Aston Villa occasionally followed us. That was under David Moyes. There wasn't a top six then. It was always a top four. Mm. Yeah. So it's, for me, the whole thing stinks. I think when things come out, I think Richard Masters will have to step down. I think the Premier League will be a defunct organisation. There'll definitely be an independent commission coming in. And I think you'll see a complete change to the way that financial fair play is ran. And I think it'll be debt-based. And I think that will have a significant impact on the bigger teams. Because although the income generated from teams like Manchester City, like Liverpool and Man United, it's all great, it's all big. But for people to go watch the game on a regular basis, for those match-going fans and the people that care about those communities, it has to change, and the regulator is going to know that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll look forward to that moment, and hopefully it, as you've just suggested, doesn't come at the detriment of Everton in the meantime. But before we move on to touch on the Palace game, and obviously looking forward, Mike, I'm just going to hand over to our sponsors. Again, as I mentioned in our last episode, to all of our viewers, listeners, we've got Tick Property Group who is supporting the podcast now. Again, give them a follow. Anyone who's looking to buy a new house, sell a house, etc., you're in the property market, give them a follow. Have a little look. They're the best on the market now, particularly if you're looking to sell. Best value for money, best price you can get on selling a house, but I'll allow the advert to speak for itself. Welcome back, everyone. Loved that little tune. YouTube didn't like one of the songs you put over that last week. I'm not sure if it was that if that one's going to pass the test. But yeah,
well, you'll find that if you earn £2 or nothing from these videos on YouTube, mate.
That's it. Yeah, your monetization has been taken off. For the benefit of anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, there, both us, you know, our podcast and Mike's. We rely on the small bit of revenue that YouTube gives us when people view our podcasts from time to time. Yeah, and it is small, yeah. From time to time, YouTube doesn't like certain things you put in there, and it'll turn off this little monetization button, which does hurt you when you've spent a bit of time and you're hoping to just keep the lights on, literally. But yeah, back to things, Everton. Just before we move past, obviously, the appeal, just taking aside all of the, all of the hugely corrupt politics from the Premier League side. Any feeling on your end now in terms of, you know, things you've heard coming out? Any feeling on what you think the outcome of the appeal might be, which we're hoping to see here early next week, I believe?
Yeah, so it's difficult because I've read the arguments for both sides, and Everton fundamentally have admitted, based on their rules as of today, that they are in breach. However, the rules changed halfway through the stadium construction. So last season, we didn't breach it. But this season, no, the season before last, we didn't breach it.
Yeah, yeah.
But last season, we breached it, hence now. And this season, we breached it. And depending on the costs that we're still paying, we'll breach it next season as well. Mm. So you sit there and you think, well, that's completely unfair. And based on that, it should be zero. There should be no points. There should be no fine. There should be nothing. It's clearly a case of the rules have changed halfway through. You can't move the goalposts at 45 minutes. You can't do that. So for me, I think it should be zero. However, we're not that lucky. So I suspect it will be 5 points. I suspect it will be halved. I think Forest are possibly in more trouble because Everton's is to do with stadiums costs and running costs, whereas Palace, Forest have just spent. They've gone for it, and it's a little bit harsh on Forest because their original cap is only 61 million, not 105 million, based on the EFL or the Premier League. And they also have mitigating circumstances in the fact that they sold Brennan Johnson for $50 million 2 weeks outside of the financial year, instead of selling him for $30 million 2 weeks prior. So by making the right financial choice, albeit they didn't want to sell him anyway, but they had to comply, they've been penalised for it. So for me,
as you were saying before, it opens a can of worms again, though, doesn't it, by letting them off on that one? Because we could say, well, we could have sold Richarlison in the next window for a lot more money, but we made that decision to try and get us closer to where we needed to be.
Yeah, so which is why I think it'll be 5 points. And I think it'll be 5 points. I think Everton will be found guilty of the second one as well and get a second 5 points. So fundamentally, from an Everton standing in the league perspective, we are where we are. I think Forest will get 5 points. And then I think you've got a massive issue for Manchester City, because next season they've got to be able to justify these 115 charges. They're not all going to be related to the equivalent of profit and sustainability. Yeah. They're actually related to lies, fundamental lies. And if that is the case, then I suspect the penalty will be harsher. But they won't. The Premier League will not want to lose its champions. It's not like Italy, where they'll just ban Juve and relegate them. And you know, it's not like other leagues that will actually do a proper job. The Premier League is stuffed.
The other thing, as you'll be well aware, and most people who are listening will be well aware, the amount of corporate partners that Man City have got that are also intertwined with the Premier League and other organisations who fund or support or sponsor the Premier League, it's not in the despite how corrupt it sounds, it's not in their interest to be punishing Man City and their associated partners, because it will have deeper rooted financial implications for this organisation. So it remains to be seen. Again, we could drive ourselves insane all night picking through all this. We'll try and move past it for the time being until obviously we do get some kind of decision on that. So looking forward to matters on the pitch, with at times when you talk about all that stuff sometimes feel irrelevant or pointless. So Crystal Palace are home Monday night. Just before we come on air, I was saying, look, I'll be gutted if McKenna from Ipswich is appointed before the game on Monday. You know, there's been heavy rumours. I think he into odds-on favourite now to be their next manager. There's very rarely smoke without fire when it comes to the bookies sniffing this out, and there's probably been a bit of money that's staked because if someone's heard something about it. Forgetting about that and assuming that Roy's in charge, I mean, to be fair to you, you said regardless, I don't think that's going to make a difference to the game on Monday. What do you expect to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is Palace are without some key players for this game. Some big ones, players that have caused us problems this season. Every time we've played Palace, it's been a difficult game, but Everton have always managed to come out on top, whether it be a replay in the FA Cup, whether it be at their place in the league. Everton have managed to find a way of getting on top of Palace. We've been awful at home, and that's me being the you know, we've played Wolves, we've played Luton twice, we've played Fulham. They're just some of the standouts where we've lost games or we've just not played well. So it's actually the fact that we're at home that worries me, because I think if we were playing away, I'd actually back
us.
So for me, I think Everton win this game. I think it's scrappy. I think it's tight. I think Everton win probably... Honestly, I suspect it's like 2-1. But we have to win, and the pressure is on us to win. The fans will know that. They're deliberately, in my opinion, the Premier League are holding it back. I noticed that Jamie Carragher had came out, he tweeted today because he's had a bit of pressure. And I noticed he tweeted today asking why the Premier League are waiting and holding back the information on the appeal. I suspect... And I always did suspect, I said it on the channel, I didn't think it would come out this week. I think it'll be next week.
Monday Night Football, it would just be an absolute, I mean, it would be a bloodbath, wouldn't it, for the Premier League on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, so I suspect it will come out the Tuesday after the Palace game. Mm. And I really do hope and expect that we have a good game and we can. It would be nice to see us just dominate a game of football, because
before you come into that, Mike, and so I'll ask you the question to bolt on to what you're about to say. How do we do that? I mean, I'm not expecting some kind of Carragher and Neville-esque tactical analysis here, but you know, we've rolled the dice with various different ways of playing at home, including throwing Beto and Calvert-Lewin off front together, which I absolutely don't want to see again. How do we flip and create that blueprint at home? What changes do you think the manager needs to make to get us more on the front foot, to help us control, dominate the game? Where does he need to make them changes?
So honestly, I think it's difficult, because when you look at the midfield that Everton have, they've got ball players, i.e., you know, they've got Garner. I mean, James Garner, you know, he can pick up a ball, he can turn, he can pass. Yeah. They've got Onana, you know, we haven't seen enough of it this season. And for me personally, I don't have an issue if he was sold in the summer. But we saw it against Man City. He comes on, he's demanding the ball, he's turning on the ball, and he's playing forward. We don't see enough of that. We see very much side-to-side balls to our wingers, and our wingers do the job, and they get doubled up on, and then we see the long balls into Calvert-Lewin, who, you know, I'm not there with Lewin anymore, if I'm being honest. I'm not seeing the guy busting the gut to get down the channels. I'm not seeing the confident player holding the ball up and keeping it like he used to. I'm seeing him having to come out wide, which takes his presence away from the middle of the pitch, which is fine when you've got Decore, but we haven't had Decore. So for me, Everton have to find a way of playing football again. They have to play football, because defensively we are fine, but we've got to start playing the ball along the deck. We've got to play these little triangles again like we used to. And I'm not sitting here saying that we're going to be the best football team in the world, but Everton also scored a goal this season that consisted of 38 passes. So we know how to do it, and we need to keep doing it, because if we keep the ball for long enough, Palace will lose steam. You know, the pace that they've got in the wings, the pace that they've got in the middle of the park, the strong forward players they've got, they won't have the ball to create problems. So Everton have to keep the ball, pass it nicely across the floor, keep it in midfield, and play those through balls to our wingers so they can invert in between. I've seen Jack Harrison look very good by running off his man. Let's see more of it. But, you know, Dyche will probably play the ball to a centre-half and go long, and that's great. We've played the most long passes this season for a reason, but I don't think it's helped at home, because teams are happy to sit a little bit deeper against Everton because they know they'll go long. So let's play football on the deck and confuse Palace. That's, for me, how we win this game.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I was going to ask, you obviously praised the contribution of Ben Godfrey in recent weeks. We've somewhat blessed now at right back in terms of having a number of options. Is this a game where Ben Godfrey comes out and maybe Ashley Youngs goes back in at right back with Seamus Coleman, just to give us that added dimension from full back, which admittedly at times Ben Godfrey's unable to give us?
Do you know what, you say that, but I've seen Ben Godfrey get forward. You know, I've seen Ben Godfrey.
But I guess the criticism would be, has he got enough assists in him? Has he got that creativity in him? I'm not saying we've seen it in abundance from Ashley Young, but, you know, he's more comfortable higher up the pitch, isn't he? Is my point, I guess.
For me, I think Ashley Young's done a decent job in midfield. And I have no problem with him playing there. The problem is, who do you drop to put Young into midfield? So then do you put him at right back? And if I'm being honest, I do think Ashley Young has been at times a bit of a liability at right back.
He has. And I guess I'm asking, do we sacrifice the fact that he's been ropey defensively, knowing that, look, we need to commit another player into that final third who can contribute to those triangles? You can combine with players, you can thread balls inside the fullback, etc.
The big thing for me is if we had to call her back, and that's, you know, I know that I think Dyche said yesterday that he's on the grass or something. So
he's been back in training.
So if you know, if Tokore's available, he starts, and I don't change the team. I keep Ben Godfrey at right back as long as he's okay.
So does he come in for Young and Harrison moves out, or does he come in for Harrison and Young?
So he stays at right back. So Godfrey would stay at right back for me.
No, and the then, point is, sorry, my question was, if Tokore comes in, does he come in for Harrison, or does he come in for Young?
Yeah, so he goes in centre midfield where Young's played. He sort of goes in front of the two in the holding, which, you know, if that's James Garner and Anana, fine, and Tokore sits in front, that's what I would do. And then you've got your Jack Harrison. If I was being honest, I'd have no issue in terms of starting better on Monday, because I've been really disappointed with Lewin this season. And look, I am not blown away by Beto at all. Yeah, but he does work harder. And his hold-up play is not great, but he works harder.
Yeah, and I think what you would say about Beto, if Tokore was fit, I think it would be more likely that Beto plays. The reason being that he doesn't rely on quality kind of Tokore doesn't rely on quality kind of, you know, layoffs and stuff. He just looked for bits. And I think when you've got Beto up there and the ball goes up to Beto, you're more likely to get bits because he's just a handful for defenders. And, you know, things bounce off him, bounce off other players when he's there. He creates chaos. And I don't think, for me, there's been enough of that at Goodison, really putting the opposition on the back foot, really hurting them. He played in the cup game, or he come on the cup game earlier on in the competition. I'm trying to remember who it was at Goodison, and he caused them all kinds of problems in the channel, Beto. And I think that's where we need that. That's where I think we're lacking. You know, you're talking about threading balls through to the winger, but I don't think there's enough movement from Calvert-Lewin going that way as well. He's a target a lot of the time, but he's very rarely running in behind. He's very rarely running into them channels and stretching the opposition.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I think if you look at the goals that Beto scored, you know, he scored that header in the FA Cup game against, you know, the League One, I can't remember
John
the team.
Doncaster.
Yeah. You know, he comes out, look, it's Doncaster, so I'm not. But the goal he scored against, was it Spurs? Whoever it was, the goal he scored, we won 3, was it? I can't remember who it was. But he won down the channel. He's down the channel, he gets to the right-hand side and he slots it past the keeper. The goal he scored at the weekend, but it wasn't
Newcastle,
given.
Newcastle, wasn't it?
And then the goal he scored the weekend, but it was disallowed because he was offside, was again down the other channel. Good finish. Mm-hmm. So, for me, he looks like he's going to cause more of a handful, partly because I don't quite think he knows what his head and his feet are doing. It's fine. I'm fine. I've seen some shocking strikers at Everton Football Club, and
at least he's quick and strong. You know he's fast enough to cause problems, don't you? And you know,
yeah,
we've seen worse strikers who've got no pace as well.
Yeah. So for me, look, no matter what Everton do, the simple aim of this game is to get 3 points. That is it. Because Luton losing at home against Sheffield United was a massive plus. Mm. I suspect their bubble's kind of going to start bursting. You know, you mentioned about potentially McKenna from Ipswich coming into Palace. Eventually, he'll pick them up. He's a good manager. He's an exciting young manager. But it's too soon. I can't see him going to Goodison Park and having any stamp on being able to compete against a Dyche side that would be difficult to break down.
Not more of a coaching background than a kind of man management. You know, he's not gonna give it like a Neil Warnock and come in and just absolutely start smashing heads together, which is probably what they'd need in the short term. No, I agree with that, and I'd like to think, well, I'd hope that Luton will start to at least level out a little bit rather than continuing on this crazy run of form they've been on. And obviously, you spoke about Nottingham Forest in the previous piece. They're obviously in the view of Everton as well. They don't seem to be able to put points together. And one thing about Forest, which I think is worth mentioning, you start to look around the squad, and although they've got quality, they've got a lot of players who you would probably put in the bracket of mercenaries. You know, your Callum Hudson-Odoi, is he really up for a scrap? Anthony Elanga, again, is he really up for a scrap? Even your Morgan Gibbs-White might be starting to think, well, I've got a relegation release clause. I'm probably going to play in the Premier League anyway because someone will definitely take a punt on me. Do I really need to be rolling my sleeves up again and trying to drag this team through it? Nuno Espirito Santo doesn't seem to have got the dressing room yet. I think they're the ones who you could really reel in very fast.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, I honestly, if Everton only end up with a 10-point deduction this season based on now, I genuinely believe we finish 15th.
Yeah, yeah.
Genuinely, because I just think the three teams that will go down will be the three that come up, and I think Forest and Palace will finish below us. I really do.
No, I sincerely hope so. Before we let you go, Mike, give us a prediction for Monday's game.
Yeah, I think 2-1. It wouldn't surprise me if we don't concede, but we have conceded at Goodison. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2-1, but I do think we win the game.
No, I actually agree with that. And I think the more tendency there is for this team to come out and play, it obviously does detract from maybe their ability to be as sound offensively. So, yeah, I'm with you on that 2-1. We will have an opposition preview coming up as well. I'm not sure if it's myself or Mills. You'll be recording that, but that'll probably be out on or around Friday. But, Mike, thanks again for your time, mate. Really appreciate it. Good to catch up as always. Hopefully we can catch up again next week when we hear whatever news it is that comes out, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. And as always, mate, have the best of weekends and up the toffees.
And you, mate. See you soon.
Cheers, mate.